Okay, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
So, first one up is Detective Villarreal.
Yes, I spoke with him several times.
Lieutenant Stanmeyer?
I think I spoke to him about press conference, if I'm not mistaken.
Detective. Today, Tammy and I are comparing some notes. We are looking at all of the people who have ever touched this case within the Milwaukee Police Department. At least all of the names that we know of. There's probably more than this.
No, never heard that.
Chief Edward Flynn.
Oh, yeah. I remember him standing right next to me. I was speaking at a gun violence conference about being a victim of gun violence, talking about Ashley, and he stood right next to me, didn't say one word. Not even, I'm sorry for your loss. Nothing. Just stood there, stone-faced.
Wow. Detective Corbett.
Yes. He's the one. He was the one that I feel really did the most work on Ashley's case. But he's the one I always talked to. And he would listen to me, really listen. I remember the day he retired, he called to tell me that he was retiring and that the last thing he wished that he could have done was solve this case.
Oh, wow.
And I believed him. I actually believed him.
And then last one on the list, Detective Gomez.
Oh, yeah. I remember Gomez. He's an interesting one. I spoke with Gomez on a number of occasions after this happened to Ashley. I remember him coming to the house to collect some evidence. It was an iPad and a card that the neighbor had given to us. I guess the trust wasn't there. I just had this bad feeling. And the stuff that he took, I'm like, I wanted to see. And like, I never got to see it ever again, like any of her stuff. I had these weird dreams telling me that things were taken out of evidence. So he called me about, I would say maybe 3 years ago, and just offered up, he was sorry, you know, about what had happened, and then just kind of started talking about scenarios, like what could have happened, like theories, and I just thought it was very odd. This was after he had been let go from the Milwaukee Police Department. I thought it was odd that he called me because it's, he no longer worked for the police, and I wasn't friends with him. I didn't know him like that. So it just kind of struck me as weird. You know, I got my head thinking, what's going on here? Like, the feelings I have with Gomez, there's no particular reason that I have these feelings. I mean, I just, it's something that I feel in my gut, like something's not right. I just can't put my finger on it.
This is fascinating because while our entire team was doing research to try and find the people that have touched this case, not only did we find Gomez's name, we also found some troubling reports on him. In 2010, the Wisconsin Innocence Project suggested that Gomez, who was 47 at the time, planted a bullet that became a key piece of evidence in the case against a man who was serving 17 years for his role in a 2010 fatal carjacking attempt. In 2011, the Milwaukee Fire Department was called to respond to the Milwaukee Firehouse Pub at 35th and Montana. Allegations of a fight surfaced, prompting the Milwaukee police to conduct an internal investigation of Detective Gomez. In 2012, Gomez was arrested on charges of domestic violence, but prosecutors did not file charges. In 2013, a federal jury found that Gomez falsified a search warrant which led to the shooting of a man in New Berlin, Wisconsin. The man who was shot was awarded $1 million from the state of Wisconsin. In 2013, Gomez was also found of excessive force for beating a detained subject who is paid over $100,000 for damages. Gomez was fired from the Milwaukee PD as a result, but he appealed his firing, which took years. Eventually, his firing was upheld. In 2016, Gomez was federally indicted for a beating and was sentenced to 1 year and 1 day in federal prison. In 2017, the city of Milwaukee paid another victim of Gomez's beatings over $160,000 after Gomez kicked him in the face, resulting in many injuries and a seizure. Now, this is a lot of information, and these findings come as quite the surprise. I told Sean about what we learned about Detective Gomez, and he was just as surprised as I was.
Damn it, y'all. Well, I'm sitting here
If Gomez was allegedly planting evidence on other cases and also falsifying warrants, is there a risk that he did something improper with Ashley's case? Would it make sense in this case for us to be able to ask the department to relook at this case with fresh eyes, or maybe even ask the Milwaukee police to give this to another department to look at for fresh eyes as well?
Based off those facts, by allowing another entity to look at that case, not Milwaukee PD, it would make sense to do just that. Not saying anything negative about Milwaukee PD. Every agency winds up dealing with an ass clown. We all do. Milwaukee is turning you down every time you ask for anything, right?
Yeah.
Shit.
Welcome to Love and Justice. I'm Kyle Olson. Today, we are taking a deep dive into the Milwaukee Police Department. We are looking at everything we know about their response to this case. And we're also taking a trip into the time machine to learn more about the MPD and their history of cold cases. Why has this case, the Ashley Love case, gone unsolved for so long? The first step in solving a problem is figuring out why it exists. In Milwaukee, only 3 out of every 5 homicides over the last 5 years have resulted with somebody being charged with a crime. That statistic is courtesy of a study from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, in which they also found that on average, only about 45% of Milwaukee County homicides have ended with somebody convicted of a crime. In the early 2000s, the city of Milwaukee was actually quite a bit of a pioneer on crime. The city's Homicide Review Commission was created in 2004 under then-Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett and former police chief Nan Haggerty. The commission was created to analyze every homicide in the city to understand if there was something police or any other entity could have done to prevent them. A year after this program began, 3 doctors from Harvard University began a study of the Homicide Review Commission. Yes, you heard that right. A study about the study. This study was founded by the National Institute of Justice and was called Developing the Capacity to Understand and Prevent Homicide, an Evaluation of the Milwaukee Homicide Review Commission. The main goal of this study was simple: to find out if this Milwaukee Homicide Commission actually worked. The study and evaluation closely examined the MHRC from January of 2005 through December of 2007. The findings of the study were pretty clear. In short, the program proved itself to be working and helping. These commission reports helped Milwaukee officials learn that the typical homicide in Milwaukee County likely happens between the hours of 9 p.m. and 3 a.m., and more often than not, it happens on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. Statistics also showed us that a number of these homicides happened at or near taverns and bars. The studies also showed that in most of these homicides, the victim and the suspect were almost always acquaintances. These commission reports have helped change laws in the state of Wisconsin. Due to some studies, Milwaukee passed ordinances that required establishments with a history of violence to mount cameras and monitor patrons inside and out of the bars. Other cities around the United States of America were quick to notice Milwaukee's success with this committee and the results that they were yielding. They adapted similar models for their local jurisdictions. By the time 2008 arrived, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported that the Milwaukee Police Department had a 93% homicide clearance rate. This is a truly impressive and almost unheard-of statistic. For those of you wondering what a homicide clearance rate is, you're not alone. My guest today is Steve Spingola, a retired lieutenant detective with the Milwaukee Police Department. He supervised the homicide unit at Milwaukee PD for the last 8 years that he served in Milwaukee. Today, he actively teaches criminal justice classes and works with a show called Cold Justice, where he helps solve cold cases nationwide. In addition to all of this, Steve is just an all-around great guy. Here is his explanation on what a homicide clearance rate means.
So basically, the homicide clearance rate, it's defined as actually how many cases are cleared. Now, that doesn't mean an individual is arrested or prosecuted. It's sort of a fake number. In other words, we've had death of offenders, they'll clear it. In other words, like a murder-suicide, they clear the homicide. We've had other deals where we know that some people on their deathbed confess to murders and they clear the homicide. So it has nothing to actually do with the arrest rate.
In 2007, Nan Haggerty, Milwaukee's first female police chief and 17th overall, while presiding over an impressive homicide clearance rate, announced her retirement as the chief of police in Milwaukee County. In a five-paragraph memo sent to the press, Haggerty said, quote, "It has been a privilege to serve this community as a law enforcement officer for more than 30 years, and it is a distinct honor to serve as chief of police for the past three." Nan granted no interviews when she made this announcement, but when asked why she was retiring, she simply gave the answer, "It's time." Insiders say that the reason she may have been looking to leave was because of politics, saying that then-Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett wasn't willing to put his full confidence in her, despite an incredible track record. Critics agree that Nan left quite a legacy behind. During her time, in addition to creating the Homicide Review Committee, she enacted stricter hiring policies and took charge of bad officers. She fired 45 officers and 5 recruits during her time at the department, more than any other chief in Milwaukee County history. Homicides hit a 16-year low in 2004, and the city saw active decreases in non-fatal shootings. She also had a famous open-door policy, allowing leaders and community organizers the opportunity to reach out whenever they felt a need. While Nan's retirement from the department was a huge loss for the city, nobody really cared. Could this be because Nan had done such a good job with getting crime off the streets that people were taking it for granted? It's hard to say. But nevertheless, the city moved on with ushering in a new police chief, Mr. Edward Flynn.
Now at 10.
Ed Flynn is our new police chief.
With that, the city of Milwaukee hires a new top cop.
I am honored to have been selected.
Here's Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett.
I am confident that he will hit the ground running here in the city of Milwaukee.
When Chief Flynn was sworn in, he did indeed hit the ground running, and things in the Milwaukee Detective Bureau took a serious turn. The chief decided to set his sights on the Milwaukee Detective Bureau. The size of the bureau was slashed nearly 40%. Testing for detective positions came to a halt, and the list of officers who were eligible for promotions to detective were left to expire. Flynn also put out a strict policy against overtime, which drastically cut back in a detective's ability to follow up on cases quickly. The police union said that of the 250 detectives in the bureau when Flynn took over in 2008, nearly 100 were never replaced when they retired or moved on. When you make a move like this, you in turn overwork detectives and make it very difficult to solve murders, much less in a timely fashion.
Retired Lieutenant Detective Steve Spingola explains.
Flynn's philosophy, and this happens a lot when you get a police chief. They come in, they develop a philosophy, whether it's community policing or whether it's community engagement. But Flynn basically decided to gut the CIB, the Criminal Investigation Bureau, didn't think that detectives should be there. His goal, I guess, was to reduce crime, to prevent crime. And he thought he could do that by basically eliminating 125 to 200 detective positions. And we cautioned him about that. You know, the detectives, it's a learning thing. It's probably like when you're doing your show here. Everybody makes mistakes. I just had trouble turning on the microphone here. It's one of those things that's learned. You can't read a book. You can't take a class. You've got to go out there and work these cases. One of the things I noticed is that even the veteran prosecutors in the district attorney's office who are good at prosecuting the homicides have left and either gone to the U.S. attorney's office or they've retired altogether. So it's kind of like the perfect storm. I think that's one of the reasons right now we've got younger detectives, more crimes, less district attorneys. I guess you could say a little bit more of a lenient attitude where we're allowing these people who commit a crime, such as, you know, aggravated assault, to be released back into society on a signature bond. And those are the individuals we're finding that are re-involved in crimes, including homicides. So, you know, the effects of Chief Flynn's decision to cut detectives basically involved more workload for less detectives. And you know as well as I do that more workload includes taking shortcuts. Let's face it, there's 8 hours in a day. You can do what you can do. And so the overtime, Milwaukee, we had a really strong CIB, a Criminal Investigation Bureau, with a number of detectives that could take the workload off of the uniformed officers. Anytime there was follow-up, whether it be a burglary, a hit-and-run accident, much less a shooting or a homicide, detectives were sent to do the follow-up so the uniform squads could go back into service. And they have a very specific function. Uniformed officers wear uniforms so people know that they're law enforcement officers. They make traffic stops. They make what we call field interviews or what we call Terry stops, stop and frisks. You got to understand that the whole department was basically rebirthed. And the younger officers didn't know what to look for when they initially got to the scenes. Evidence sometimes was destroyed or walked away. And then we had the younger detectives and a lesser number of those that couldn't investigate these cases. Milwaukee always had, and they still do, kind of a unique perspective with homicides. I go to different states where I teach, and normally, if you and I were partners in a lot of major cities, we're up for this week. In other words, it's you and I, any homicide that comes along, we get called in. It doesn't matter if it's 2 a.m. or 1 p.m, we go and start it, and it's our case. In Milwaukee, they pass that off to the next shift. So in other words, if there's a murder at 1 o'clock, detectives who start the early shift at 4 get the follow-up. What they can't do, they give to the shift at midnight to 8, the late shift, and it continues. And so I always thought that was good because there was continuous follow-up being done. But when the Criminal Investigation Bureau was cut, overtime was cut, with less detectives and more work, it just didn't get done. And these cases went cold. And I think you know as well as I do, once a case goes cold, trying to revive it is a very difficult thing.
Dave Daly wrote an article for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in which he said, quote, Flynn transferred supervisors from the patrol division to the detective division, meaning people who had never been detectives were supervising detectives. Flynn's reforms directed uniformed officers to conduct interviews, a job that detectives spent years learning how to do effectively. So what is the problem with all of these shifting job responsibilities? Simply put, it compromises investigations.
I'll be honest with you, if you pick up a cold case file and start reading it, you're never going to have all of the knowledge of the first detectives that were at the scene and attended the autopsy and talked to the parents, like in this case, or knew what the crime scene looked like. Because a lot of times when I go to crime scenes, I don't know what I'm looking for. I know that sounds ridiculous. I know it when I see it, but is it out of place? What doesn't make sense here? And so you start to look at things, and you know, for an individual to just pick up a report and read it, it's awfully hard to go back and to try to visualize. And I think most people are visual learners. I know I am. And it's awfully hard to figure that out, what happened there.
Do you think you can have too many detectives working on a case? Or do you think there's no such thing?
That's a good question. I think that part of the problem is when people get promoted or people retire, other people pick it up. So I don't know if at one time, you know, unfortunately, that's not happening anymore, if it was a problem, because there's so few detectives that you're not going to have the ability to have a number of detectives taking a look at one case anymore. Who knows how many cases we've lost when a tip comes in and you can't follow up on it right away because you're too busy with another case.
In 2012, Governing, a Washington, D.C. magazine, featured an article that said, quote, investigations conducted by uniformed officers in Milwaukee County resulted in prosecutors receiving ill-prepared cases. As a result, judges often threw out cases and uniformed officers were disciplined for mishandling investigations, unquote. Under Police Chief Flynn, the homicide clearance rate in Milwaukee would ultimately hit a low of 58%, which, according to the FBI's archives, is well below the national average. It's also well below the 93% it was under Chief Haggerty. As you will hear throughout this entire season, many people we've talked with on this podcast have discussed how poorly they thought the police interview process was following Ashley's death. As it turns out, there's a reason for this. They were overworked and understaffed. Steve, let me start with a question here. How many people do you think have worked on Ashley's case since her death back in 2009?
Well, I'd venture to say somewhere between 25 and 50 detectives have basically taken a look at this.
Wow. Wow. 25 to 50 detectives. That really speaks to some of these cuts, doesn't it?
It's now in the hand of the cold case detectives. So there's not a lot of cold case detectives, unfortunately, compared to the number of cases that they have. And those cold case detectives in Milwaukee have got so many cases that you've got to be, you know, you cannot even remember all of the details from one case, much less if you got, like I said, I bet you that the average cold case detective in Milwaukee is probably looking somewhere at 10 cases. So imagine trying to remember every crime lab report, the name of every witness, what they said. I work on multiple cases at some point, and it just becomes a blur at some point as to what, you know, what the autopsy said in this case and that case, and what caliber of bullet we're looking for as far as a gun that killed the victim. It's awfully hard. It's like anything else. When you're trying to do multiple things, it's not that easy to do.
Is there an advantage to making these cuts and reducing detectives? Well, that all depends on who you are. But if you're Chief Flynn, there was one big advantage, and that was saving money. And the more money that was saved, the better Flynn looked, especially as the newcomer chief of police. While Flynn was passionate about saving money and showing the city that he was willing to be a team player, he was also extremely passionate about the impact gun violence was having on the Milwaukee community, as you can hear in this clip from the aftermath of a police hearing.
Now, there's room for everybody to participate in fixing this police department, and I'm not pretending we're without sin. But this community's at risk, all right. And it's not because men and women in blue risk their lives protecting it. It's at risk because we got large numbers of high-capacity, quality firearms in the hands of remorseless criminals who don't care who they shoot. Now, I'm leaving here to go to that scene. And I take it personally, okay? We're going up there, and there's a bunch of cops processing a scene of a dead kid. And they're the ones that are going to be out there patrolling and stopping suspects that may have guns under the front seat. They're the ones that are going to take the risks of their lives to try to clean this thing up. All right? We're responsible for the things we get wrong, and we take action. We've arrested cops, we've fired cops, and so on. But the fact is that the people out here, some of them, who had the most to say, are absolutely MIA when it comes to the true threats facing this community, and it gets a little tiresome, and when you start getting yelled at for reading the updates of the kid that gets shot, yeah, you take it personal, okay?
There is no doubt that this is a difficult balance. You have to manage a budget while also finding ways to solve the city's incoming homicide cases. But as Flynn's tenure of chief continued, the homicide cases started piling up because there were less detectives to take on the cases, and no overtime being approved to handle them. Well, except for one case. There was a time when Flynn issued a stay-until-you-get-it-done directive. This was in 2014, when a $6 million, 300-year-old violin was stolen from the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra. Every resource was given to finding this violin, and overtime for officers and investigators was approved. Insiders told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that all 40 of the Metropolitan Division's homicide detectives contributed to the violent investigation in some way. It was all hands on deck, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, until the violin was found.
Steve Spingola vividly remembers this.
They pulled some of the best homicide detectives off. And get this, just to show you how bad things can go, they called the FBI. And the FBI actually came in, and they have, if you can believe it, an art unit. That individual came in and told Milwaukee that he'd investigated cases like this, and he believed the violin was already on a plane headed for Europe to be sold over in the black market. And it was at a barber shop in downtown Milwaukee, if you can believe it.
Within 10 days of the robbery occurring, the violin was found.
I want to praise the Milwaukee Police Department as well as the FBI for working so closely together. It's been a model of cooperation.
Well, today the Milwaukee Police Department is pleased and very proud to announce the safe recovery of the Lipinski Stradivarius violin that was stolen January 27th. Its safe return is the result of hard work by many members of this agency and their partners in other agencies, as well as the engagement of an active citizenry that provided information that would later prove important to the successful resolution of this investigation.
What kind of message does this send to grieving families of homicide victims? Teresa Brockman, Ashley's grandma, shares her thoughts.
I was really upset because I feel that you can always replace an object, but you cannot replace a life. I know it was very important, but still, you can always make another violin, but you can't bring back my granddaughter. And this just infuriated me. They took police away from cases to help find the missing violin. I was furious. I was just really, really upset. I was so mad.
Steve also had takeaways from the violin case.
It's a real frustrating thing for a lot of detectives because everybody has inner drives. And I think that homicide detectives, let's face it, they pick to work homicides because A, they're good at it, and they want to work on homicides. You know, really, you think about it, a stolen violin, honest to God, you know, but it made national news. And as you mentioned before, politics do drive some cases. And the mayor obviously wanted that case solved because of the high profile that it had.
Just a few years after the violin case was solved, in 2018, Chief Edward Flynn retired from the Milwaukee Police Department after 10 years of service.
I promise the residents of this city that I will not let you down. I've done my professional best to fulfill that promise. Now, I was brought here to be a change agent, and a change agent I have been. Change is hard. Now, I've been privileged to be the leader of this fine agency and proud of my role in its evolution.
The time had come for Milwaukee County to usher in a new police chief, and after an extensive search, they found the right man for the job. Welcome, Alfonso Morales.
I stand here in front of you today to thank you for believing in me. It's a proud moment, a humbling moment for me to move forward for the city of Milwaukee, which I love. Yes, I could leave. I could have retired a while back, and I can retire now. I'm here because I'm indebted to the community that put me here.
Morales came into his position with the goal of prioritizing community policing. He started to reorganize the department by disbanding units created by Flynn. He reinstated more detective squads and started placing more officers on the front lines in multiple districts around Milwaukee. Morales also created weekly shoot reviews, pointing a laser focus on the gun violence within the city. He also took a huge stance on solving Milwaukee's crime problem, especially when it came to solving cold cases within the city, harkening back to the times of Nan Haggerty.
What we're emphasizing is not only clearing the case, but solving the problem. That brings closure to not only the victims that are living in fear, but the community as well. It helps them find closure. And if you cannot bring closure or solve a homicide case, it allows not only the individuals, but the public to think they can get away with murder. And that's one thing we can't have in our community is have people to believe they can get away with murder. We'll never forget your cases. There's cold case files, and you'd be surprised at some of the cases that get solved from 10, 15, 20 years ago. Never give up is one thing I say to the victims of families that are going on without the case being solved. I've been a part of some of those, and it's very interesting how we find out who did it, but don't give up.
Morales really appears to be the knight in shining armor that Milwaukee needs to help clean up the streets and usher in a new era after Flynn's polarizing tenure. More cold cases starting getting solved in Milwaukee County. Homicides decreased 24% in 2018, and the amount of non-fatal shootings throughout the city decreased. In 2020, Morales' impressive track record continued to shine. Morales was reappointed for another four-year term as Milwaukee Police Chief. But as the year continued on, a global pandemic and a nationwide rally for social justice brought about some major unexpected challenges. Critics started to point harsh questions at Morales, pointing out that the Milwaukee Police Department seemed ill-equipped to handle COVID-19 mandates and control, as well as countless protests happening throughout the city. On May 29th, 2020, a peaceful protest turned extremely violent, with citizens robbing local businesses, setting buildings on fire, and driving recklessly through the streets of Milwaukee. Shots were fired by a few of the protesters, with one of those shots wounding an officer in the foot. In response, the Milwaukee police increased their city protections by using rubber bullets, pepper spray, and tear gas for future protests and gatherings. Critics questioned Morales about these new tactics, and his response made national headlines.
2,000 years ago, an angry mob came before people to say, crucify that man. That man being Jesus Christ. Law enforcement throughout our nation, law enforcement is being crucified. There's peaceful protesters that are angry for what happened and will work with that. But there's also people that are taking advantage to loot our cities, to burn our cities. People are trying to kill police officers. We have officers that are being followed home. Why are our families now being targeted? What are we going to get by doing that? That has to stop.
Not long after Chief Morales made this public statement, the Milwaukee Police and Fire Commission met on July 20th, 2020. Morales was served with 11 directives. Within those directives were several subsections amounting to over 30 bullet points. The deadlines to comply with each of these directives ranged from 7 to 30 days. There was never any discussion by the commissioners or opportunity for clarification on any of the bullet points.
A defiant response from Milwaukee's police chief to the Fire and Police Commission. It comes in the form of a 25-page letter.
Chief Morales tells the FPC it does not have the legal authority to give him a list of directives. This may not satisfy a commission looking for a reason to fire him.
In Chief Morales' letter, he said, quote, the July 20th, 2020 directives issued to Chief Morales and, in effect, all of the Milwaukee Police Department were extraordinary in their breadth and the lack of time to respond. This urgency rendered MPD's critical priorities, including preparing for the Democratic National Convention and addressing a spike in violent crime, to secondary. The directives are replete with factual errors, unclear requirements, very serious legal issues, and a lack of due diligence. Morales held his ground and made his position on the matter very well known.
I am the chief of police for the Milwaukee Police Department, and I'm going to do so until told not to.
Within a month of being given his list of directives, Morales was fired as chief of the Milwaukee Police Department.
The chief, effective immediately, is revoted or demoted to the rank of captain.
Breaking right now at 10, Alfonso Morales is out as chief of the Milwaukee Police Department, the city's fire and police commission, with a unanimous vote demoting Morales to the rank of captain.
They could have given Morales more time to respond to the directives or even fire him, but instead they chose to demote him. The former police chief listened in and learned his fate virtually and never made a comment during the meeting.
On August 6, 2020, Michael Brunson was brought in as the acting chief of the MPD. He served for only 5 months before being replaced by acting chief Jeffrey Norman in December of 2020.
Norman says despite the issues surrounding the department, he's focusing on dealing with the increase in homicides.
Just honored to be in this position. I believe that it's not about looking about what happened in the past.
just by understanding what's going on in the future. I know what's going on, know what needs to be done, and I'm ready to do it.
But believe it or not, that's not where Morales' story ends. Morales filed a wrongful termination lawsuit with the city of Milwaukee.
A new ruling raises the possibility that Alfonso Morales could return to his job as Milwaukee police chief. Both the city and Morales' lawyers are now on the clock. Either they come up with a settlement or Morales is chief again.
On Wednesday, a judge ruled he will be chief in 45 days unless a settlement with the city is reached. The city argues because Morales is retired, a court can't put him back into the same position.
A judge rules that he either needs to be given his job back or receive a settlement. To say that this caused a flurry of emotions within the city of Milwaukee would be an understatement. Just listen to Milwaukee Alderman Bob Bauman.
There's a high probability Morales will be back as chief of police in 45 days.
And just 2 days before Morales was set to return to his old position, news broke in Milwaukee.
Morales was set to take his old job back on Thursday. Now it looks like that will not happen.
After nearly 1 year of what's been called a mess, finally a done deal. A unanimous but reluctant approval by Milwaukee's Common Council Tuesday, signing off on former police chief Alfonso Morales to get a payday of $627,000.
I believe it is fair to taxpayers. Again, it's not a happy chapter anytime you're having a payout like this. But we felt it was really, really important. We, as the alderman said, we acknowledged that there were some very serious procedural due process issues here.
Milwaukee certainly had its fair share of drama with this case. A lot of drama unfolded in this city over the course of a year. A lot of politics. And while all of this was happening, the city as a whole began to really struggle.
Milwaukee homicides in the city are up more than double from this time last year.
In less than 24 hours, five lives came to a violent end. All of them shot dead, the youngest victim just 16.
Milwaukee has tied a record for the number of homicides in 1 year. The police department says that we are at 165 homicides for the year. That is the same number for all of 1991. That's the worst year on record. That was the year serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer's victims were counted and included in the 1991 homicide count.
You heard that right. In 2020, Milwaukee tied its worst year ever on record, the Jeffrey Dahmer year. Milwaukee homicide cases saw a 100% increase from 2019 to 2020. 190 homicides were recorded over the entirety of 2020. But unfortunately, things got even worse in 2021.
In other news, an awful record shattered in Milwaukee County. The medical examiner confirming it's investigating the highest number of homicides than any other year on record.
In 2021, 197 homicide cases were recorded. This beat the record in 2020, which crushed the previous record of 165 homicides in the Jeffrey Dahmer year. Things have become so bleak in Milwaukee that there is now a dedicated website just for Milwaukee homicide statistics. And every year, right before Christmas, when the new statistics are released, you can't help but think about all the families who will be going without a loved one at their family table due to senseless violence in the community. This is a problem that has been bad in Milwaukee for years, but it keeps getting worse. Steve shares his reaction to this.
When I was there, Milwaukee, like most major cities, they prided themselves that they cleared 80% of the homicides. In my opinion, that probably meant that 60% were cleared through arrests. And then they had these other administrative clearances where people confessed and, you know, they were good for two or three homicides like Dahmer. And so they cleared a number of those homicides without actually prosecuting somebody for that. However, you know, I just checked before the show here, the homicide clearance rate in Milwaukee is now below 30%. So that's including cases that are cleared where nobody is prosecuted. And I know that their department has basically been criticized that they're actually only making arrests in 20 to 23% of the actual murder cases in Milwaukee right now. That clearance rate has been dropping year in, year out, And I think that part of the problem is A, the inexperience of the detectives, and B, I think one of the big problems is that citizens are not actually participating. They are our eyes and ears in these cases. And a lot of people don't snitch, and they just do not want to get involved in a lot of these cases.
With all of this juggling of police chiefs and tug of wars over politics and money, is it possible that citizens don't want to get involved with these cases because they have lost trust in the MPD? The point of this episode is not to go against the hardworking men and women at the Milwaukee Police Department. But the facts remain. They are running low on resources, manpower, and budgets. And the path to lowering homicide rates is becoming muddied and potholed with ever-changing police chiefs and their personal policies. There are some people that no doubt care and want to help. There are even great citizens who will come forward with tips. But sometimes it is hard for citizens to play an active role in trying to help the Milwaukee police when there is so much drama unfolding about the Milwaukee police in the news every single day. It's also hard when you have people from outside agencies, people like our very own Sean Smith, who are willing to help this case and the city pro bono, but keep getting turned away. Steve Spingola shares his thoughts.
The Milwaukee Police Department has never been open to allowing somebody else to come in and take a look at their cases. And, you know, law enforcement, it's like a testosterone-driven business. It's my case. Keep your hands off. I don't want anybody else looking at it. I know that they shift different detectives to review these cases within the department, but they never let anybody from outside the department go in and take a look at these cases. Milwaukee has always been considered to be a very good department. I think it still is. You've got outstanding men and women there. But let's face it, I guess the quality of the cases and the quality of the work that's going into some of these cases hasn't been enough to clear a lot of cases. It's kind of an embarrassing thing where you can't solve a case like this and it remains open. And I think it's open, you know, for the public to guess how effective is your police department. Do they have any faith in them, you know, clearing another major case if something would happen?
Tammy Love will be the first to tell you that while she understands that there are good people working at the Milwaukee PD, she also worries about their abilities to solve this case.
Throughout the years, I've met some very, very good detectives and people at the Milwaukee Police Department. But I am losing faith in the Milwaukee Police Department solving this case. I never, never will lose hope that this will not be solved because I can't go there. It has to be solved. Mm-hmm. But with the Milwaukee Police Department solving it, I don't know. I can't help but think they're not even looking at our case anymore, along with how many others they have. The city of Milwaukee is struggling. They're struggling with the budget cuts, trying to get more officers on the streets, more detectives. And it's just so hard to have hope when you see all this happening. And it's frustrating when you see how they're struggling and you try to get help from wherever you can, and it just gets ignored. Or so I feel that it's just getting ignored. And this is really one of the biggest reasons we're doing this podcast, because this podcast is not easy. It's not easy, believe me. But it has to be done, not just for Ashley's case, but for other cases.
Mm.
You never know.
So here we are, a little clearer on why this case hasn't been solved. While there is no good answer on why the Ashley Love case is cold, the turbulent history of the Milwaukee police help give a better understanding as to how we got here. The investigators at the MPD may not have the time and resources to talk to people about Ashley's case, but I do. The investigators at the Milwaukee Bureau have a never-ending list of cold cases to solve. As a result, they have to prioritize cases based on the information they have in front of them in order to help solve a case. This brings up an extremely important point. We need the public's help to bring forward new tips. The Milwaukee police need a compelling reason to get involved again with this case. a new tip or lead is the only way that this case will continue to get the attention it needs to finally get solved. So, yet again, we ask the magic question, what do you know? I'm asking you, whoever you are listening to this podcast right now, what do you know? It's time to speak up. It's time to talk to your friends. It's time to talk about Ashley. Next time on Love and Justice, Tammy Love and I will be sitting down and answering all of your burning questions. This you will not want to miss. We'll see you then. Love and Justice is an official podcast of Magic Lamp Productions and is recorded all over the United States of America. This episode was executive produced, directed, and hosted by me, Kyle Olson. Co-executive producer, Noel Kane. Segment producer, Jessica Solomon. Producer, Mattia Rose. Associate producer, Miranda Schmidt. Editing by Cody Crabb. Production assistant, Natalie Izquierdo. Very special thanks to Tammy, Joe, Anthony, and Alex Love. Additional special thanks to Teresa Brockman, Terry Love, and Third Wheel Podcast Studio Los Angeles. Episodes of Love and Justice feature news clips from WYSN 12 News, Fox 6 News Milwaukee, CBS 58 News, TMJ 4 News, and City Channel 25. If you have clues, this is your cue to give us a call on our hotline. Open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and rate it 5 stars. Every single review greatly helps our exposure and increases the odds that more people will listen, which will help get this case solved. So please, rate this podcast and share it with your friends today. It only takes a quick minute. Somebody knows something. Maybe not everything, but something. Chances are that somebody is in Milwaukee right now. It could be you. There is a cash reward of $5,000 for information provided that leads to the conviction of Ashley Love's killer or killers. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening.